If you or someone you know is struggling with alcoholism or addiction, do not hesitate to reach out for help. You can find numerous free resources on our website, thebeginagainpodcast.com, and there are tons of resources and support networks available online, in person, or just a phone call away. You don't have to face this challenge alone. Welcome to the Begin Again Podcast. I'm your host, Gary Menkes. On the Begin Again Podcast, we delve into the inspiring journeys of individuals who have overcome alcoholism and addiction and emerged as true trailblazers in entrepreneurship, business, sports, and beyond. Through authentic, uplifting, and profound conversations with our guests, we aim to shatter the stigma surrounding addiction and demonstrate that recovery can be a catalyst for remarkable success, strength, and resilience. We firmly believe that by listening to these accounts, you will be empowered to unlock your own potential, instigate positive change in your life, and contribute to the creation of a better world. So, get ready to be inspired and embark on your own personal journey of growth with the Begin Again Podcast. Welcome back to the Begin Again Podcast. I'm your host, Gary Menkes, and joining us today is a woman that has dedicated her life to recovering out loud. She inspires so many, spreading hope and love. She is constantly raising awareness of the killer fentanyl. She just launched JSL Recovery in Orange County, California, where her mission is to help others discover their purpose, passion, and happiness in their recovery journey. She is the host of Jenny's Sober Lifestyle Podcast. I could keep going. Jenny, Jenny, thanks for being here. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. You know what? I just need that introduction every morning and I'll be good for the whole day. So I appreciate that. Thank you.
Well, it's all true, right? It's all true. So right. We need to talk nicer to ourselves. I'm speaking for myself. That's been true. A thing lately. Like, you know, be kind to ourselves, be kind to each other, but be kind to ourselves too. Like we got to
absolutely
tread lightly. We've been through so much, right? And especially in our community. So through everything we've been through, I mean, right. It's such a common denominators. Again, speaking for myself, we're so quick to beat ourselves up for no reason, really. It's probably because of stories we've told ourselves in the past that are ingrained in us that we need to work through. So, but I know you have some experience with that as well.
Yeah. Work in progress.
Progress, not for perfection, right?
And that's right.
As long as we keep taking a good step forward and moving forward every single day. And that's how I look at it.
1% better every day.
I'm on that right now. Actually, just going through, I took the masterclass, James Clear, 1% better every day. It's amazing.
That's it.
Move mountains, right?
Yep.
So Jenny, I see you everywhere. You know, if I just go to your Instagram page, I will ask myself, how does she have the time? Because it's all day, it seems like, but it's so amazing and it's so inspiring, all the stuff that you push out. But how do we get to this Recover Out Loud world?
Yeah, you know, that's a long journey, but we can go back into all the details, but how I got into all the social media work is that I was working at a treatment center and I started a podcast for them, for the treatment center when COVID hit. So this was before this huge like burst of podcasts many years ago. And it's COVID and I'm like, how the heck am I going to connect with people? You know, nothing is in person. And I had this idea because I come from a film and television background. I was like, you know what? Why don't I go online and just go live? And so for a while, that's just what I did. I just went live. And then I thought, this would be really cool to like have on guests and this be a podcast. Yeah. And that's what it grew into. And I did that for several years. And, you know, this last year, 2023 in June, I took a leap of faith, which we can get into, changed a lot of things in my life and launched my own podcast, left the company I was working for and, you know, just blessed to have an investor right now that's helping me through all this to get to where we need to go that believes in my mission and what we're doing. Because people ask me that a lot. They're like, how do you just like, what do you do? Where do you make your money? Like, how are you just doing this all day?
Yeah.
But with that being said, the treatment center is really going to ramp up in the spring. And when that does happen, Emily, my media director that's behind me here, who's
hi, Emily.
She's a magical human being. She'll be doing a lot more with my posts. She does already, but you know, the constant stuff for me will probably simmer down a little bit. But yeah, you know, just recovering out loud is my mission. It's been put on my heart, you know, to do this from the day I got sober.
That's amazing. That's really incredible. And like I said, the stuff you put out is really,
It's different. It's so good. It really is. And so much of it seems from where I'm sitting, you know, real. It's so authentic and it's really comes from the heart.
And
But
that's what I do. You know, for me, I'm a firm believer that if, because this has worked out for me in my life, if you're vulnerable, if you're your authentic self, if you lead with good intentions every single day, that the success will follow. So for me, I'm like, okay, I'm going to get online. What am I going to do differently? You know what? I'm just going to be me. And you would think that that's not something that would be different, but it is, because so many people, you know, bless their hearts, are kind of like living this facade, or they have a mask on when they go on social media, and it's not a lot of the real life stuff. And so I just go on there, which was terrifying at the beginning, but now it's just, you know what? I'm just going to go be me, exactly who I am. And in turn, it's going to help others.
I love it. That's amazing. Now, I've heard you in the past. I know, I believe you're from Vancouver, correct?
Yeah.
You moved down to Los Angeles. I saw some of your, you know, I watched some of your stuff actually, and it's really good. Okay. So you pick up pieces of your story in this part. Of that. I don't want to pick up too much because I wanted to want to have our first sort of real authentic conversation ourselves here. So tell us, let's go back if we could a little bit and tell us, you know, how, tell us some of the dark days and what led us to where we got better today.
Yeah. So I was raised in Vancouver, Canada. You know, I had a double life as a child. You know, there was my one life that I was very detached from, where I was sexually molested my whole childhood from a family member. So age 3 to 12, right? And then I had this other life where I was, you know, a happy child and played sports and had lots of friends. But there was always this other thing, you know, this darkness, you know, this trauma. And so that I think is what really segued me into drugs and alcohol, you know, just trying to numb myself starting at a very young age. For me as a child, with that happening, you know, we learn so much as we're growing at those years that were so impressionable. And so for me going through that long-term trauma, I really didn't understand what love was. I didn't trust anybody. I was over-sexualized. I was very secretive. You know, I had all these things where I was very confused because I'm going like, well, this is a family member and they're supposed to love me. And it was very confusing, right? So I had all these things going around in my head. And when I finally told the truth, that's a very long story in itself. But the result of that was that he was arrested and then put on probation. And it just got really messy. The family got divided, you know, and so I turned to drugs and alcohol to numb myself. It was, I didn't realize that's what I was doing, obviously, at that age, but it was just like, F this. I don't want to think about any of this stuff. And so back in that day, it was a lot of like psychedelics. So, you know, I'd be popping acid at 12, 13 years old and ecstasy and smoking a ton of weed and getting blackout drunk in a field somewhere, because that's what we did as teenagers growing up in a small town. And that obviously just, you know, got worse and worse as I got older, but there was still another part of me that, you know, I was holding it together somewhat. You know, I finished high school. I was in film and television classes, working in that industry, you know, booking, you know, small little movie parts or modeling gigs from the age of like 13 on, which is what resulted in me leaving Canada and coming out here because I'd made some connections out here. But yeah, it was two things. When I turned 18, the person that was on probation, his probation was up. It was 4 years of probation, 4 or 5 years of probation. And he started coming back around. Ugh. And it was super unhealthy for me, obviously. And I thought, I have to get out of here. I have to leave. And I was offered a job in LA for a TV show. Through the one person that I knew out here that was an agent. And I left without even thinking twice. And it just goes to show you, because I look back now and go, holy smokes. Like, I was that messed up at just under 19 years old. I was ready to leave the country that I was raised in. moved to another country that I don't know anybody except one person. I married an American for reasons we won't get into. That was over twice my age. And here I am now in LA with a suitcase, $3,000 in traveler's checks, a husband that I didn't know, and working on this TV show. And that's how it all started.
Jenny, how old were you when you told the truth finally about the
12?
You were 12 years old. Mm-hmm. So he's in trouble. And, you know, listen, where I'm sitting here, like, probation, really? Like, oh, that's doesn't seem to fit, you know. And
no,
about Vancouver also, you know, I've been watching a lot of Gabor Mate, the doctor. Uh-huh. He's always talking about Vancouver and how it's one of the worst spots, maybe the worst spot in all North America as far as drug overdoses and everything. And you know, he's the one, the first couple of years ago I started hearing the word childhood trauma and start looking at, you know, these are words I didn't know until, I mean, I've been, God willing, you know, May, I'm going to be sober for 18 years and I still haven't looked at childhood. Thank you. You know, childhood trauma. And Gabor Mate is like, you know, every single person, like I think he said it's 100% that is an alcoholic or an addiction has gone through childhood trauma. And then you start so many people, right? Jenny, like you talk to so many people daily, right? You have people on your podcast and it's like, it's across the board, childhood trauma. And childhood trauma could, you know, could mean anything for anyone. Kind of it's relative, right?
Right. But
you hear your story and it's just like, it's gut wrenching, you know, and you know, I have a daughter now, you know, not that I needed it, but I have a daughter, she's 10, you know, and you said from 3 to 12, you know, 3 to 12, it's gut wrenching. And you have that double life. And of course, just like doctor says, right? What do we turn to? We turn to numb it. We don't want to feel the pain we're feeling. We're ashamed, whatever it is. And you know, that's what we do. And it takes over our lives. Mm-hmm. And so you're 18 and you move to LA, like you said, suitcase and a dream, $3,000 in traveler's checks, a husband, and you're starting to work. Tell us what happens when you get there.
Yeah. And just to back up for 1 second where you said about, you know, that didn't seem appropriate for him to just get probation. He went to jail for a little bit, but that was also a thing that I was so upset about and wanted to numb myself with that. Like, how is it that I've gone and told the truth and finally had the courage and strength to do that, and then I was let down yet again by the system?
Exactly.
And I mean, I'm 44, so this was a long time ago, and this is a small town, and you know, half the family pretty much disowned me because he was the star athlete and all these things, and pretty much all said no, it was BS. And even though I had gone to doctors and specialists and there was absolute proof of trauma, all of that, I got the short end of the stick, you know, in that situation. So yeah, I came out here to the States. I'm very angry. You know, I feel like I've been wronged in so many different ways. I can't trust anybody. And here I am on this path, which, you know, looking at it now is just like a path of destruction. Like there was no good going to come out of the way I started going down that path, at least at that time. So I came out here, I got on the TV show, and I immediately went to a doctor. And that's where my story of pharmaceutical drug use began. I was all doctor prescribed. So I was never like an IV heroin meth user or anything like that. Mm-hmm. But I was massively addicted to Xanax, Adderall, and pain medication. Mm-hmm. And I found doctors that would just readily give those things out. And right. So that went on for a long time. I left my first husband pretty much immediately after we were married. I was like, this was a bad thing to do. This was wrong choice. This guy's crazy. And I left, and, you know, I kept thinking like, man, I have the worst luck with men, and, you know, God, my picker must be off. And it's like, okay, no, it's that you're repeating these patterns in this cycle because it's all you really know. And, you know, I didn't realize that at the time. Of course, now I can diagnose that, you know, as what it was. But so, yeah, it was just like one bad relationship to another. And, you know, now here I am in LA. I've met some, you know, cool people that, you know, work in the modeling and TV industry and start running with that crowd. And from there, I was brought into a world that was just as hard to get out of as the drug use. And that was the adult entertainment industry. Mm. And so for me, It started very slowly. It was like a 3-4 year progression before I actually got into that industry of just doing things that were somewhat risky, you know, like sexy lingerie or maybe a European topless magazine, just little things like that. But over time, you know, I got deeper and deeper into it, was making a lot of money, and, you know, got offered to do a contract with Playboy, to do work with them, with other females. And, you know, I didn't even think twice about it. I was like, wow, this is an insane contract. I get to hang out with all these celebrities, live this lifestyle. Yeah, I'll do it. And in my head back then, I thought I was so cool because I had no problem taking off my clothes in front of a camera. I was like, wow, this is awesome. I'm so cool that I can just do this and not have a problem with it, not realizing that I was over-sexualized. And nobody in their early 20s should feel comfortable about taking their clothes off in front of a camera. And so I really preach that with people that work in that industry, because just like drug and alcohol use, people that work in that industry statistically is over 90% of them have been traumatized as children, if not higher. Like, come on, you know, like the children that were brought up in a good family and didn't have these things happen, they're very unlikely to go down that road and get involved in that industry. So yeah, you know, I was in this industry and had these blinders on because, number one, I'm on these medications that are numbing me to like really understanding the reality of anything. And I'm surrounded by these successful people that have all these nice things. And now so do I. And I'm like, there's nothing wrong with this. You know, like I'm good. And so I did that for a very long time. I was in that industry for over a decade. You know, during that time, I married an actor, fighter, actor guy, big, tough guy that I thought, you know, could take care of me, keep me safe. I ended up having my son with him. I have one son. That obviously did not work out. But that's the path I went down. And for me, getting out of that was, and we can get into that too, but it's so tough because here I am as a child leading a double life, essentially have a mask on, right? And then here I come down to Los Angeles and now I'm this AKA, this character that I play. Nobody even knew my real name. Like I was literally this alias and that was me. And that's, people didn't know me. Like I didn't, I kept myself removed from everybody. Nobody knew that I was abusing medications. No one knew who my name was. No one knew who I was when I went home and washed the makeup off and put on a pair of sweats and was sitting there popping Xanax all night. Like they didn't know that. And so I was so detached from reality that it was very hard to get out of it all.
It must have been, you know, you hear that too about the people that have been through trauma that you've been through at such a young age, right? The statistics, whether it's adult industry or, you know, adult bars, if you will, like the numbers of these poor girls is you said 90 something percent. It's probably higher, right? At least that's what I've read. And it's just so sad and so terrible, but I can't help but think, you know, you're since a young age too, right? You have this, you're living this double life so far. Feels like, you know, your entire life. And as you're telling me, like, all I'm thinking is she's also so alone. Like she, you know, she's brand new to the country. She married and whatever happened, this first husband seemed like whatever it was. And wasn't meant to be, but so you meet some other friends, but also I feel like you must have felt just so alone at the same time, because there's really no one, at least where I'm getting at, no one really close to you, at least yet. Is that correct?
Right. Absolutely. And the people that I thought were close to me, a lot of them were just using me for my connections, the parties, the lifestyle, going to the Playboy mansion, you know, like I didn't know who any of my genuine friends were, because it was, we would just hang out in these kind of situations.
Right. Right. You know, it's, you say about didn't know who anybody was, no one knew who you were. Right. I can tap into that a little bit myself as well on a different level. But when I got sober, at least early on, like my whole, everything I was, my entire identity was like this party guy at best, or you know, towards the end, it just got really dark, but it was who I was. Like, you know, it's like when I finally like gave up, you know, almost 18 years ago, like I was like, all right, all my boys, all my buddies, like probably going to lose them all because, you know, this is what we do. So they're gone. I'm working in an industry, Wall Street, where, you know, I'm supposed to go out and entertain people. Like, how am I supposed to further my career? All right. Their career's gone. Right. And then you start working on yourself, right, Jenny, which I'm sure you've done the work, right? But it came to the point where it's like, you know, who are you? Like, who am I? Who is Gary? And it was this really difficult place to be, right? For a while, for a good long while, because everything that I was or everything I did was sort of came from a reason, right? Like, I got in so much trouble too, Jenny. Like, my childhood trauma is different than yours. I haven't been, you know, sexually molested, but, you know, there was a lot of drugs and alcohol going on in my house at a really young age. I saw stuff you're not supposed, you know, little kids aren't supposed to see.
Yeah.
I got, you know, threatened by this old man when I was 10 years old. And this is something that I discovered like recently, actually, on one of the podcasts. It's, you know, it wasn't the event that the guy scared the shit out of me, right? And he was, you know, he threatened me. But so I went back into my room at 10 years old. I started crying because I didn't stand up for myself and I felt like a coward. So I took that like the rest of my life and I kind of did out that way. And then once I started fighting, you know, alcohol's first for me. Like, as soon as I started drinking, you know, I could be the happiest guy and drop of the guy die. I'm going to be the nastiest guy. And you definitely knew I was there, good or bad. It always ended up bad. But this identity, like, you know, people probably think that I was like this tough guy as well. And it really bothers me. Like, I have the rap sheet that says I was, right? Like, I assaulted a police officer at 16. That was my first time I got in trouble, you know, multiple assaults, just stupid stuff.
Yeah.
Or even worse than stupid, you know, bad stuff, some really bad, heavy things. But I always struggle with it because in my heart, I knew it wasn't me. Like, this wasn't, you know, but my girlfriend, who's my wife now, I love to say that my girlfriend at the time, who was my wife now, she called me out like, you know, Gary, you say you want to be like this good person and you say all these good things and it sounds great, but actions speak louder than words. Like, here's what you're doing, you know, and here's who you are. And so all this stuff, anyway, this like this conflicted identity of who I was, even to this day, like even I'll have someone be like, oh, you know, hey, don't piss him off. You know, like, I still need to shake it, you know?
Yeah, it's so true. And that applies to me in many different ways. And for me too, also is like, it's all out there for everyone to see. Like, a lot of people have skeletons in their closet, right? And no one really knows about it unless you disclose it. But mine's all out there. Like, all anyone has to do is put my name in Google and see my whole entire past. And so, you know, for me, that was a very like humbling, grounding experience too, you know, being an acceptance of that. What finally got me out of the industry was in 2007, one of the Playboy executives raped me. And again, just like my childhood, I go straight to the police after it happened. And, they did a rape kit on me. They drug tested me. So I had high alcohol level. My drug test came back for many different substances and I'm a porn star. And so, and he's this big Playboy executive. And so, you know, it was looked at as, by the police, rough consensual sex. And that's not at all what it was. So here I am again in the same situation. I went to Gloria Allred's office, retained her as my attorney, and on contingency. And she ended up, and nothing against her, but she ended up passing my case down to one of her partners because I couldn't evoke the proper emotion that one would associate that happening to with. And that's it. Like, I've worn these masks and protected myself for so long that for me, showing emotion, breaking down and crying, like, it just, I protect myself so much. And so I wasn't showing those kind of emotions. And, anyways, it ended up, you know, 2.5 years later of going through this whole civil thing, I walked away because I was like, I'm either going to kill myself or I just need to walk away. The money is just not worth it. And so here again, we're in another one of those situations and I'm just like, what is going on? And so I quit working in the industry after that. Which was one of the hardest decisions I ever made. And it didn't come easy. You know, for a long time, I had these grand ideas of what I would do to get out of the industry. And one of the things was start getting tattooed. And that's why I have so many tattoos, because people would tell me, and I was under contract where you couldn't get tattoos. And so I was like, I'm just going to start getting tattooed everywhere. So that's when I got my first back piece, was in 2007. I started working on it, and I still was getting hired. I wasn't under contract anymore, but they still paid me out for like 2 years, a lot of money. So that was, you know, I had money coming in with that, but I wasn't booking those gigs, but now I'm booking gigs that for people that like tattoos and this whole thing. I'm like, darn, like I can't get out of this. And I finally got out of it, but it was so hard, and I had to go get support and help for that. And that's what I'm on top of, helping people, you know, find their way to recovery. I also am very passionate about people that are trying to get out of that industry, because when that's all you know, and you've made a ton of money doing that, and you're this identity, to get out and you have to walk away just like drugs and alcohol. You have to walk away from that lifestyle completely, meaning everybody in it who are your supposed friends, like the whole lifestyle,
right,
which, you know, you can relate in different ways, walking away from everything and this person you were and then trying to start over again.
Right.
Was very, very difficult. And at this time, my son, well, I got pregnant in 2008. So I was thinking like, I'll get pregnant, I'm going to have a baby. I was still with my husband at the time. We stayed together for a long time off and on. And I tried to be a stay-at-home mom, and that's when things got really sloppy. You know, I started having someone on the street that I would go to once a week to get my pills, because I had just gotten to such a level with them that it wasn't enough what I was being doctor prescribed. And so then I was, you know, taking a lot more of these medications. And I went on a 5150 three times, which is a hold, like a psychiatric hold at the hospital, solely because I would take so much Adderall and not sleep. And here I am on all this Adderall. I'm still like PTA mom, doing all these things, right? So I wasn't drinking heavily at the time. And so I'm still on all these medications, and then I wouldn't sleep for days, and I would end up going into psychosis, and I'd end up in a hospital. So those things were starting to happen. Here I am, I'm now anorexic skinny, and I'm still like in denial as to like how big my problem is. And so I just thought, because I didn't hang out with drug users, like I was in the closet in my bedroom, you know, right. I was very secretive, and I didn't look like a drug user besides being really skinny. It looked like I had an eating disorder.
Right.
And so, I tried to stop. I'm like, you know, I'm just gonna stop taking all this stuff, and had no idea what would happen. No idea. And I would go into such gnarly withdrawal within like 4 hours, because that's how often I had to take stuff.
Wow.
That I would end up in the hospital. And so I was like, oh my God, I can't even do this. And so then I had this novel idea that I would add alcohol into the mix. I started off drinking as a kid, kind of, you know, in my 20s, a little bit was drinking, but then really into the pills. And then I thought, okay, great idea, right? I'm gonna start drinking. And by drinking, I'll get off all the pills and I'll just drink. And then I'll get off the drinking. And that was the idea. And it was a blessing in disguise, because when I started drinking is when I actually got really sloppy. And so it was becoming more and more apparent to people around me, there's something not right here. And that went on for 3 or 4 years. And so the final moment for me getting sober, I had so many bottoms. You know, people talk about your bottom and what was that like? And I had so many bottoms. You know, you would think I overdosed twice, overdosing, being on a 5150, you know, putting myself in just horrible situations, not being a good parent some of the time. Those would be bottoms, right? And, sure. But it wasn't anything like that. It was a very quiet moment where I was in my bedroom and I had a gun in one hand and I had my life in the other hand. And it was this voice, call it God, call it whatever you want, that just said to me, if you don't make a choice right now to get sober, you are going to die. And it was just as clear as day. And finally, after all these years, the first time I ever did it, I asked for help. And then I went to treatment after that, because I always thought that asking for help was a weakness. You know, I had had bad experiences when I asked for help and told the
Right.
truth in the past. And I didn't realize it at the time that actually asking for help was a very healing moment for me. And it was actually the most courageous thing you can do is to
Absolutely.
ask for help.
Sure.
And thankfully, I had somebody in my life at that time. He was an angel. He actually took the steps to help me. So helped me find a treatment center. And I went to treatment. And
Amazing.
The rest is, you know, all downhill from there, but in a good way, in the
Far
sense
from
of
it.
no more drugs and alcohol. But it was in treatment. I've gone through the detox portion. I'm now in residential, clearing out the cobwebs. And I just knew it was like that voice again. And I just knew that God put it on my heart that I had to help people. And that's what I needed to do for the rest of my life, because the only way that I was truly going to get past my past was to be able to turn it into something positive.
Yes.
You know, I had to take those negative experiences and make it that it actually helps somebody else. And then it's all worth it, because now I'm not in a position to go, oh man, I wish that didn't happen. Now, as awful as it was at points in my life, I wouldn't change any of it, because it made me the woman I am today, that can be strong, that can have a voice, that can help others, that can be vulnerable, and all of that. So
it's amazing how many times often we talk to, we hear our stories, right? And your story is incredible, but we have this moment, like we all have this like moment of the divine where it's like, we're at the turning point, right? And it says, look, we're at the turning point, right? And me too. Like I've had so many worse bottoms, Jenny, than when I got sober, finally. Like I was, I went to rehab in 2002. When I was in and out, I didn't even put 90 days together. My sober dates in 2006. So I was in and out for 4 years, and what a, just a disaster those 4 years were. It's just really a place to be. But I was just sitting in my apartment on a regular, I always say it's a Tuesday night because it was as regular as could be. And it was all alone. I was in my apartment with West 12th Street in the West Village in New York City, which is a great part. It was a great apartment. And I was just sitting in there and something was overcoming me, and I just didn't want to do it anymore. And I got sober in AA, like AA saved my life. I'm of the camp, I say this all the time, I don't care less. I don't care how you get here. Like for me, if someone asks me, AA's would save my life, Alcoholics Anonymous. So that's what I would share with them. But I had that moment, like we all have it. Like we hear these incredible, sometimes, you know, we get on our knees, say, God, please make it stop. And God enters, right? He really does. And you had that moment, you know, you had a gun in your hand, but you had your life in the other hand. I mean, scary, but beautifully said at the same time, because it's so real. Right. And I had a similar epiphany too. You know, like I was so ashamed of all the stuff I've gone through up until this point, right? Like all the trouble, all the stuff. I still have self-esteem issues. I feel less than all the time, but I have the tools to sort of work my way out of it. And then, like we said at the beginning, it's a work in progress, right? We're still trying to get there. But, you know, to be at this place now, I had the same similar sort of epiphany where I was like, it dawned on me. I'm like, you know what? All that stuff, all that shit I'd done, all the shit that happened to me, all the stuff I put myself through, it's going to help somebody else. I'm going to flip it all on its head. And I'm going to flip it all over. I'm going to put a total 180 on it. And it's going to be a source to help someone else. And I saw this amazing quote and I can't remember it, so I'm going to botch it a little bit, but it's sort of like, you know, everything that we have been through, everything that you've been through, everything I've been through is going to be a beautiful roadmap for someone else in the future, how they're lived their life properly.
Absolutely.
And you're living it. I mean, you're living proof of it. And now it's your life's purpose. I mean, it comes through and all you put out, and it's coming through right now.
Well, thank you. Yeah. You know, and for me, I went to treatment, and then while I was in treatment, I enrolled going back to school. So for drug and alcohol studies, got my degree in that to be able to, you know, be a life coach, be a case manager at a treatment center, and really, you know, try to get in the trenches with all of that. So I did that. And that's what led me on the road of working in treatment and kind of just working my way up the ladder. I started as a case manager, life coach, and then I owned and operated a woman's sober living house. And I worked at other treatment centers doing, you know, business development for them, which you're having these relationships with their treatment centers. And now I'm taking it on my own to what I want to do. And just, you know, being that voice, but it takes a lot of work, you guys. Like, this is what I always like to stress to anybody that's out there that's gonna, you know, either going into or in early recovery. This doesn't just get better overnight. You know, you got to think about how long you were using drugs and alcohol for, and mine was like 20 plus years. And it's like, it doesn't just get better. We have so much work to do on ourselves, and you have to be willing, you know, you have to surrender and be willing to take direction and do the work. And the work is ongoing. You know, recovery is a journey. It's not a destination. Mm-hmm. And I did a very, very, I mean, I was at a meeting every single day for the first couple of years. I still wholeheartedly believe in AA and all of those different types of groups, but you need to explore what recovery looks like to you. Like what you were saying, whatever works for you, do that. Yes. And explore all of it. You know, don't give up. You know, I hear stories, I deal with clients all the time where it's like, oh, I went to this meeting and I didn't like any of those people and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, well, you need to try different meetings, maybe have a different outlook. Like I'd always tell people, like, okay, if you don't think you're getting anything about that from that meeting, what is something that you can say? What is a seed you can plant to help someone else? Maybe that meeting is not about you. Maybe it's about you helping someone else and getting out of your own way. And so, you know, to just really explore what recovery looks like. And for me, it was a solid 5-year journey, excruciating journey in recovery, doing the work. So that's therapy. I'm in school. I'm, you know, working in treatment at the same time as an intern, you know, going to meetings and really surrendering to that, you know, because you can go to therapy and do this, but if you're not 100% in, you're going to struggle. And so I did the work, and it wasn't until these last 2 years, because I have just over 7 years now, 7.5 years, where I finally am like, okay, like I truly believe that I can do anything, and that I love myself, and I love being alone, and I know my worth. And, you know, one of the biggest things, which was the game changer for me, I went from a victim to a survivor, because we can subconsciously get stuck in this state of mind of being a victim. And we get into this momentum of blaming everybody for everything. Oh, well, it's this person's fault. I'm this way because of this person, not realizing that that's holding so much control over you. They're still controlling you when you're in that space. So forgiving, you know, becoming a survivor and forgiving yourself. You know, for me as a mother, I had so much guilt, shame, embarrassment surrounding, you know, certain things that went on, and truly getting to that place of forgiveness for yourself and not just others. So there was, you know, key things that were game changers for me, but it took a lot of work, and you just have to take it one day at a time. Sometimes minute by minute, hour by hour. When I was in treatment, they tell me to go sit on my hands because I would want to have all the answers and ask all the questions. And they're like, Jenny, go sit on your hands. I used to think it was so dumb, but now I get it. And I'd have to just literally go sit on my hands, and you'd have to pause and think about things. Yes. And 9 times out of 10, if not more, if you pause, if you're feeling emotional and come back to it, you know, hours later or the next day, even, your mindset is completely different. Absolutely. So there's just so much to learn in recovery, and just to soak all of it up and give it a chance in different ways and see what works.
Absolutely. I love everything you just said. It was so important, surrender. And that's what happened to me. Like I was given the gift of surrender in that moment. That's what was, it was different. And it was also the first time that I started doing the work on myself. You know, I was asked to breakfast last week by a friend who's really struggling. He's going through some stuff, and he asked me for help. You know, can you sit down with me? Right. And then, right, those are the gifts, because, you know, this guy wasn't getting those phone calls 18 years ago. I was the last person he'd ever consider having a conversation like that. Right now I get them all the time. Right. And so now we're recovering out loud, which is a semi new term, not that new anymore, but you know, perfect strangers are reaching out to us now. Right. And there's nothing more fulfilling. Right. Mm-hmm. But you talk about the victim versus the survivor, you know, and it's the stories we tell ourselves. Right. And that's what I was learned when I went through. For me, it was the step four, and you start writing down all my personal inventory. Right. And it's the first time I shared any of this stuff with anybody, because not only was I ashamed of sharing a lot of this stuff, there was also part of me like, you don't rat anybody out. Like there was stuff about my father. I was like, I kept it in my back pocket my whole life. Like, I'm going to drop this bomb on someone one day. And I just never did because I felt like I'm ratting, you know, it was like a rat ratting him out. And so, you know, all that stuff in me, it didn't compute with all of my instincts, right? Some stranger says, hey man, here's my phone number. Give me a call tomorrow. Like I said, all my instincts are like, get the fuck away from me. Like, I'm not calling dude tomorrow, but I was like, you know what? It's working for them. You know, I'm going to do what they tell me. For there's the first time I was just like, I know nothing. And I'm going to go in with an open mind and given, like you said, the gift of surrender. But, you know, again, going back to this victimhood versus survivor, it's amazing. It's beautiful. I hear your story and you go into treatment and then you go to back to school. And these are the things people need to hear too. Like it's one thing to abstain or stop drinking or doing drugs, but there's such a whole nother gigantic, beautiful thing on the other side when you start doing the work on yourself is what I've discovered, right?
Yeah. And that's what I preach to people is, you know, it's one thing to get sober. Yes, that's hard, but you have to find your purpose, your passion, and it could be in many different forms. Like it could be, it's endless, but what makes you happy, you know, and anything is possible for anybody. You can take the why not me mentality instead of thinking, oh, maybe for you, not for me. Oh, boohoo. Well, why not me?
Right.
You know, why can't I do these things? And really just looking at life that way and just finding what works. And, you know, for me, it's like, I had to humble myself, which was a game changer for me too. I went from making a lot of money to working as an intern at $16 an hour. Right. And you know what? I was so grateful for that, you know, that I was able to do that. And the work I was doing was so meaningful. Like I was coming home every day filled with like this, oh, I just helped somebody, you know? Yeah. So anything is possible. I never in a million years would have thought that I was going to get sober, work for $16 an hour and do these things. But if I can do it, if you can do it, really anybody could do it.
Yeah. And that's the message. That's the message we want to convey. That's the message you're conveying every single day in all your posts, that we're not alone. You are not alone. And you can come in and totally change your life around. I say this ad nauseum, like when you walk into an AA meeting, you walk into treatment, right? There's no big sign like saying, hey, come on in. You can completely change your life. And that's exactly what happens when you come in and you do the work and you start working on yourself. And you said something so important before as well about just really quick going back to the victim versus survivor is all these resentments that we had, right? Like that was such an eye opener for me. It was such a discovery that it was pointed out to me, like you might have these things to be resentful for, and maybe, you know, maybe you have a right, you know, to feel that way, but here's the harsh truth. Like it's up to you to be free of it. Otherwise this is going to dominate your life the whole, you know, for the rest of your life. And by the way, that person that wronged you, you know, they're not thinking about you right now. So why are you sitting here? Yeah. You're the only one that's being hurt by this right now. We learn how to find a way to forgiveness, or we learn to find a way to come to peace with things.
Yeah.
It's best ways, like you had said, you flip it over and to turn all this thing and to help someone else. And then that's true beauty and that's purpose, right? And that's living, at least from my experience, with a higher power, because I didn't talk about that. I had foxhole prayers, like, get me out of this one. I'll never do this again. You know, all yada, yada, yada. And, you know, now I start my knees every single day in prayer, you know, and started early on. You know, I was like, listen, I'm not ready to pray. They said, just pray tomorrow that you don't drink. And I was like, all right. And I prayed that day that I don't drink today. And at the end of the day, I couldn't believe it. I said, holy shit, I didn't drink today. And I said, at the end of the day, thank you for giving the gift of sobriety. And I did that on day one, Jenny. And it's part of my prayers in the morning and night, you know, to this day.
I love that.
No, it's true. You know, and it's, you know, my prayers have evolved, right? And you add things and I have a whole sort of ritual now, but those two prayers are part of my morning prayers every single morning and night. And then here's another thing, which I love to share is, you hear this in recovery, you know, like you say, property of my recovery, like you can put a sticker and say, oh, this thing or this, you know, material thing, this house, whatever, you know, I owe to my recovery, because if it wasn't for my recovery, I wouldn't be here, or I wouldn't certainly be talking to you. But it's also my family. Like I'm going on 18 years old and I'm 18.
Really?
Going on 50 years old, to be clear. That was a Freudian slip, perhaps. But, you know, God willing, like I said, I'm, you know, going to 18 years, which is a lot of one day at a times, right? But, you know, my children have never seen their dad drunk. And so it's not even them seeing me drunk. I know the way I drank. And it's funny too, not to go, but not to back up, but you had said, you know, you were pills and there's like the drinking sped things up for you.
Yeah.
It was the opposite. Like I was alcoholic from the get go. It's when I found cocaine later, like the cocaine sped everything up for me. Like as far as, you know, the demise, and it sped my whole just, you know, darkness up for me. But if they ever saw, you know, forget about all the acting out, like my aura, my energy in me, just one drop of alcohol in me. I know it sounds crazy. I know it's the truth. They would sense it and they would immediately be like, wait a minute, what happened to dad? He's a little different right now. And, you know, I was talking to my buddy about my kids, and I was just talking about my son. I'm like, you know, he's such a great kid. He's nothing like I was. I was such a little wise ass in trouble and nonstop when I was 9 years old. And he's like, well, you know, Gary, he's growing up in a different environment than you are. Right. I'm like, oh yeah, right. And so when you break things down, or again, speaking for myself, when I break things down, things I'm grateful for, like that could be like, I could stop right there and I'm doing okay today. Right.
Yeah.
A sober dad for my family. Right. And that's a win, right? That is
absolutely
a total.
Yeah. And staying in that gratitude. I mean, it's something I always say too. It's like, no matter what's going on or having a bad day, we can always go to gratitude of things that we have now that we're so grateful for. And the bad things don't seem as big. And touching on forgiveness just real quick and having a higher power, I struggled with it. I know a lot of people in early recovery struggle with that. You know, I don't believe in God, and you know, how I'm not going to forgive this person. They don't deserve it. And I always would say, what worked for me, it's like, you know what, I'm just going to turn it over to my higher power as I see it. And you could see it as anything, you know. And for me at the time, it was, I'm just going to turn this over to my higher power. And what brings me the most like clarity and gives me the most like spiritual full body experience is being down by the ocean. So for me, that's what it was. And I said, you know, I don't have to forgive them in the way that it forgives what they did. It's just turning it over so you don't have to carry it with you. Because for years I was like, I'm not forgiving that person. They did this to me. Why would I forgive them? But
of course,
just letting it go so that you don't have to hold on to it anymore. It doesn't mean you have to be friends. It doesn't mean you have to say what they did was okay. It's not about that.
Such a good point. Really important, you know, and that's part of my prayers too. And it's literally as literal, you know, God, please remove this from me at once. Please take this from me. You know, please take this. For me, or please take this resentment for me. And that's why, you know, you go through the steps, and you said it's the journey. You know, there's no graduating. There's no like we get to a certain place. I think there's anything we're chasing. You know, we're chasing our sobriety. That's pretty clear, right? But I'm chasing peace of mind, right? I'm chasing, there's things that I want to do, and it's all around service now. Like, you know, how can I help people? How can this is where this podcast started from? Like, you know, I don't have enough sponsees. There's more, I wish I could do more. And I was like, maybe this podcast, maybe we can do more, and, you know, a little bit
of,
right. And that's where it came from. So, but, and like I said, I think off camera, the amazing people like, is just like, that wasn't part of the, like the little business plan I wrote up. Like, oh, by the way, I'm going to meet incredible people, vulnerable people sharing their amazing stories that are just here to help other people like yourself. Like, what a beautiful thing that is. That is something
I didn't realize how much I was going to get back from just, I had my Instagram account for a few years, but I never worked it. It was like a dead account. So I came back on in June, and started doing this work on there May, June. And the outpour of people that reach out to me every single day that I know are so genuine, like you're saying, it's like, more genuine, I trust them more, even though I don't know them, than, you know, maybe people that I know, because they're just speaking their truth. And, you know, it's like, we know we're doing a good job when people feel safe to be vulnerable with us. Well, and so I just keep pushing, like it's working, you know, by having my account and Recovering Out Loud. Just in the last 6 months, I've helped a few people get sober, you know, that have never done it. And an elderly lady, and just, you know, these amazing stories where I'm like, just keep doing it and keep showing up every day, no matter what, even if you're having a crappy day. Yesterday, I was like all in my head over some stuff, and I was like, screw it, I'm just going to go on and do a story about it and call myself out and show people like I struggle too, you know? And it's just for me, having people that I can look up to, I have mentors in my life. It was like pivotal for me when I got into recovery to like find these people, seek them out that I wanted to align with. But, you know, being that for other people, just, you know, spreading this message, and really all it takes is just being ourselves.
It is. And sometimes that's the hardest thing. And sometimes, like, again, speaking for myself, we're still finding more. The more will be revealed about who I am and what I want to do. You know, it's a process, right? It's a journey. The whole thing's a journey. But on that note, so where can we find you? What's your handle? And we're going to put it all in the show notes anyway, but people are always going to want to find you more after we hear this story.
Yeah, it's Jenny's Sober Lifestyle. So Jenny's _sober_lifestyle. Also, you know, Jenny's Sober Lifestyle at Gmail, if you want to write me privately on there. And then JSL Recovery. So the JSL Recovery Center, I did the announcement, but it's actually not going to launch, like, doors open until spring. When that happens, I'll message you, and yes, I'm going to do like a big open house, and I'll probably go live a few times and just show everybody that for me is two part of my like long-term plan and vision. I want to be able to have this treatment center, truly help people the way I feel that they can be helped long-term. And then the long-term goal is to make enough money doing this in the private pay and insurance-based treatment that I can open a nonprofit and provide services, resources, all of it for people that deserve it. They just might not have the money or the insurance. So that's the final long-term goal. Hopefully in the next 5-10 years is to be able to open that and truly help anybody.
I love that. That's amazing. And your YouTube channel, because that's where I see a lot of Jenny's Sober Lifestyle YouTube. Yes. And so you're thinking more in the spring is when JSL, the doors will open? Because that was
the doors will open. Yeah, more in the spring.
That's wonderful. Yeah. Let me ask you one question in kind of closing. And, you know, this is a question I ask not everyone, but you seem to live it. And the only reason I ask it is I was in a meeting actually, and some guy just kind of spoke to himself in the third person. Like, I wish I could talk to my, you know, my 18-year-old self walking down the steps in this meeting. And you live that in a way, but I just want to ask you, what would you tell, you know, 17-year-old, 18-year-old Jenny who just got to Los Angeles and knowing what you know now and you bump into her, what's your advice for her?
Know your worth. You know your worth, and be patient, know your worth, be patient. You know, I was so about the fast lifestyle, you know, do drugs, fast result to feel better, fast money, doing whatever I needed to do. And it's like, nothing good comes from that. Usually, you know, it's like, you got to put in the hard work and the success follows, you know, later. So just slow down, know your worth, be patient, and have a voice, you know, have a voice, always stick up for yourself. If something doesn't feel right, if you're uncomfortable, speak your truth.
Yes.
You know, like, you should. I'm at a place now where all I want is to be at peace, no drama, right? And so I know when my body starts feeling off, and if something isn't serving me and isn't right for me, I'm out. But back in those years, I was such a people pleaser. You know, I just did what other people were doing and what they were saying. And just don't do that. You know, have a voice, just be you, you're worth it. You don't need to do all these things. It's just live your truth, live who you really are. And I promise you, people will love and appreciate you for it way more than living a facade. That's what I would tell myself.
I love that. That's beautiful. And it's all words that I could see all that you post. So it's, like I said, you do live that. You truly do. And it's so beautiful to see.
Thank you. Go follow
her, Jenny's Sober Lifestyle. And we will put it all in show notes as well. So please give her a follow when you're ready. When JSL is ready to go, please. I'm a huge fan. So we're going to promote the shit out of it when it's time to
Thank
go.
You.
I want to be a part of any way I can. I know you talked about doing some lives, so I'm always available for you, but
thank you
so much for your beautiful story. It's so inspiring, and for all that you do in the Recover Out Loud community.
Thank you. And thank you for having this podcast and Recovering Out Loud as well.
It's a pleasure to be on the same path with you.
I feel the same.
God bless.
All right. Talk to you later.
Bye now.
Thank you for tuning in to another powerful episode of the Begin Again podcast. We sincerely appreciate your time and support. We hope that today's conversation has ignited a spark within you, affirming that recovery is not only attainable, but can also be a wellspring of strength and resilience. Our ultimate goal is to make a difference in someone's life every single day. By sharing these stories of redemption, we strive to empower you and inspire you to unlock your fullest potential, facilitate positive transformations, and contribute to creating a better future for yourself, for your loved ones, and the world at large. If you know someone who could benefit from listening to our show, please share it with them. And if you resonate with our mission and feel compelled to do so, we would greatly appreciate your support through a 5-star review, following us on Instagram, and subscribing to our YouTube channel, the Begin Again Podcast. The more positive reviews we receive and the wider our message spreads, the greater our collective ability to help others realize that change is possible in their own lives. Thank you once again for being a part of our community. May you be blessed on your own journey of personal growth and transformation.